Welcome to the Everyday Ironman Podcast, where we talk to real athletes just like you and me that are working to achieve an incredible goal. My name is Mike Bosch, and I'm excited to have with me on this episode returning guest Richard Crippen. Rick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be back. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. And I got to be honest, I looked it up. And I'm ashamed to admit that I don't know this by heart, but you were actually on episode 100. You were on a milestone episode. So that's pretty cool. I don't know what number this will be. It won't be 200. We haven't made that milestone yet, but it's good to see you.
It's great to be back. And yeah, I remember 100. And it's funny, as you say, you go through your numbers each podcast. I always remember that as 100. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is super cool. So obviously, you know, you've been on the podcast before, you listen to the podcast. We always start with like a level set introduction, but you've already given that to us. So if the listener out there is unfamiliar, we would encourage them to go back and listen to episode 100, where you shared your experience at Ironman 70.3 Hawaii.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, yeah, which was super cool. Yeah, you're the only athlete that I can remember that had come on the show to share their Hawaii experience. Now, we had a couple on that had done Kona, but you shared your 70.3 Hawaii experience. And I remember that. It was super awesome. I always think about you telling the story about running on the golf course with the undulated path and thinking how difficult that would be. So what have you been up to since you were last on the podcast?
So after Hawaii, I did Ironman California, which was a great day. And I'd highly recommend that course to anybody that does it. The swim is similar to what you experienced in Oregon.
Yeah.
You have great times and improved just like that. Flat bike, flat run, just a great overall run. And then actually last year I went and volunteered at Ironman California, and kind of off of your suggestions. From your experience with volunteering, and that was almost better than race day itself.
Nice.
I will be back in Ironman California this year. I actually met a few of your listeners. Is it Devin?
Devin Maine.
Yeah. So I met him out there on the course. Unfortunately, he took a little spill during the bike.
Yeah.
Broke a collarbone. But I was actually, because I volunteered, I did the finish line as well, and I was able to pick up a medal. And so I delivered to Devin, I think about 2 months ago, just kind of dropped off at his front porch.
That's
saying,
cool.
I know you didn't get this race day, but you have a hell of a story to tell to go along with it. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, there's nothing that compares to that volunteer experience. So if you're out there and you're listening, you're like, definitely go volunteer, give out some medals, especially at the end of the race, which is so much fun. And I wish I could remember who it was. It might have been Kat Heimberger, who took my advice of having one of their family members get the volunteer shirt, and then you can go anywhere. Like, it's like you're like a VIP with that volunteer shirt on, right? I remember, you can get to the finish line, like, nothing. I mean, hey, I'm flying low below the Ironman radar at this point, but don't spend $500 on the VIP experience to be able to hand your loved one a medal. No. Go get the volunteer t-shirt, right? Hand some water out at an aid station for, you know, a couple of hours, whatever it is, get that shirt and then go put the medal on for free. That's all I'm going to say. And you get a souvenir yourself. So that's super cool.
So I got to tell you a couple of my cool moments from just volunteering. But I did bike check-in, and there was a gal that flew in from wherever she flew in, and her husband couldn't make the trip. She had a flat tire that morning and bike at the bike check-in part, right?
Yep.
Or not bike check-in, but bike transition. And because it was her first Ironman, she was just nervous, panicky. She didn't know how she was going to get through the day. She had a flat tire. You know, all that, it was simple stuff that if it happened on the course, she could have handled it. But because of where it happened in the morning, she was just
frazzled.
And so I just helped her put air in the tire. As simple as that, right?
Okay.
10, 15 hours go by, and I'm handing out medals at the finish line, and here this gal comes through. I couldn't recognize her from Adam.
Yeah.
As soon as she crossed her finish line, she recognized me, came up and gave me the biggest warm hug.
Aww.
And just said, "Oh my God, I could not have made it through the race if it wasn't for you helping me out that morning."
Oh my God, that is so awesome.
Just little things that we take for granted.
Yeah.
That just meant so much to her and her journey for that day. It was and then just one more quick story, and you love this, but I was standing in between my shifts. I was standing next to some outhouses, restrooms.
Yep.
And some person walked up and they had to use the restroom. And I'm watching them throw their bikes on the ground, right? As they go use the porta potties.
Yep.
Well, you know how much these bikes cost, right?
Well, I know how much some of the bikes cost for sure.
Right. I mean, I think we're both on the lower tier, but we know how high they go, right?
Yeah, I do.
So imagine people putting, let's just say on an average, probably $5,000 to $10,000 a bike on the ground. So I offered to hold someone's bike. Before you knew it, I was a portable bike rack just holding. I had one bike going down the middle of my legs, holding two seats out on the other side as people are using the porta potties, right? This went nonstop for a couple hours. So I created my own volunteer station.
That is funny.
But it was so cool watching everybody's setups. I mean, I saw pizza rolls taped to bars. I saw full-out kids meals, like McDonald's kids meals taped to bars. I mean, we all have our little secrets and quirks to get us through race day.
Yeah.
But that was probably the coolest thing, is to sit there and look at everybody's setup and what gets them through the day.
That's funny. That is funny. Yeah. I think I've shared on the podcast before, one of the things that I really enjoy volunteering at is bike check-in. Obviously the day before the race or whatever. And you can really spot the athlete that is first time, new, completely lost. And to be able to help them through that mental process of, you know, where's bike in, where's bike out, where to swim in, all that stuff. That is so, oh my God, that makes me feel so good. And bonus, you get to see everybody's cool bike at the same time, right? Which there are some really, really cool bikes out there for sure. And well, I got to be honest, Rich, I noticed the other day, I think we have the same bike.
We do.
Yeah. Yours is newer than mine, I think, but same color and everything.
Mine's a 2021.
Yours is new.
Speed Concept. Yep.
So is yours a rim brake or disc brake?
No, it's rim brake.
We have the same basic frame. Mine's a 15, but basically the same.
Yeah. The way I look at it, the riding a bike, very similar to what you do.
Uh-huh.
Meaning that I don't need disc brakes because that's going to help me in cold weather, rain, and all that. If it gets cold weather and rain, I'll be inside.
I'm not riding anyway.
No, it doesn't matter, right? So come race day, if that happens once a year, then I'll deal with it. But
My mountain bike and my gravel bike have disc brakes.
Yes.
Because those are going to be more dirty, muddy, wet conditions or whatever. But yeah, my road bike that I'm building and my race bike are rim brakes. Our bikes look different now because I put a whole new aero bar setup and I should be done with it. I got one more part that I had to order and it was actually delivered to my work today and I worked remote. And so I will have it all put together and I will post some pictures on Instagram when I'm done with it. I've been making adjustments to it over the last 2 weeks, getting everything just right. I think I'm pretty happy with it. I still think I spent too much money, but I think I'm happy with it. Yeah. I know. I'm looking around to make sure my wife's not paying attention.
Hey, so you have the Tri-Rig arm cups, right?
So I bought the Tri-Rig Scoops XL. And so what they are, I had the Tri-Rig cups or the scoops. I had the scoops, which were the extended carbon fiber arm pads that had high side, basically sidewalls. And so it really locked your forearms in. Like you were locked in. I loved them. But really what I was dealing with, the bike's too small for me. And I had gone to the bike fitter last year and he's like, yeah, it's too small, but we can make it work. So he had me have two shims 3D printed that were 20 millimeters to get my armrests up, right? And that got me through Oregon. But the problem with it is my arm, my elbows were higher than my hands or very even. And so my wrists were in an awkward position to hold on to the arrow extension where the shifters are. And so I had another part 3D printed for it to go underneath the riser between the riser and the base bar. But the problem is those bolts go in on an angle. And so it threw the angle of everything off. And so it wasn't going to work. So I ordered these, I ordered a part from the watch shop in England, and it's designed for the Speed Concept with the mono bar. And basically what it does is you take the mono bar off and you put this part on, and it allows you to put individual risers on, almost like the new Speed Concept has. So now it has the two individual risers. So I got adjustable, risers. So they adjust from 10 degrees to like 35 degrees. And then I bought the Tri-Rig Scoops XL, which go basically from your elbow to your hands. It's all one piece. It's rounded. And so your elbow locks in. Yeah. And I have them set at 10 degrees and they're still pretty, it's got a pretty good angle to it. But it's all about getting the actual extension. So it's got so much adjustment now. So now I had to get the ends of them rotated right. I had to get my bike computer set up. The one thing that I lost that I got to be honest, I'm not excited about, but I'm going to have to figure out how to get through it, is I lost the ability to have a center hydration mount. They sold me one, wasn't really designed for this. And I kind of tried to make it work. And I was just like, I don't know. So yeah.
You don't like the down tube or behind you?
I have them behind me. So I do have them behind me, but I really like the center mounted one where you can just kind of lean forward and take a little bit of fluid. You don't have to take your hands off the bars. You can stay in aero. That's my preference. So I lost that. So now I'm only carrying two bottles.
Where's your Garmin go?
Well, so now my Garmin did mount to that center hydration. So now my Garmin mounts to the extension pole that comes out of the scoop where your hands rest. I had one already, and so it mounts to that, which is actually nice because now the computer is out in front of me and I can see it in my peripheral vision versus having to look down at it, which is where it was. So it's pros and cons. Okay. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to get – I have them in my attic. I have a whole, I bought them in bulk, the really, really large water bottles. Mm-hmm. And I'll just carry two of those instead of two of the shorter bottles. Okay. And I'll just carry two bottles instead of three.
Yeah.
So
it's just, like you said, it's just a little bit more time with probably out of aero. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But so far on the trainer, I haven't ridden it outside yet, but on the trainer, it's pretty comfortable.
Good.
And I'm in a better position.
You went from a decline to, is it flat or is it like a 10%?
No, it's 10% up. So my hands are 10% higher than my elbows.
Yeah. I need to do that. And I don't know if it's aging over the last couple of years, but even being level isn't as comfortable as I find myself sliding forward a little bit. I want to get those like risers just to hold my hands up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And the nice thing about this setup is, whereas before I had that 20 millimeter shim, now I can go up 50 millimeters if I wanted to. I bought a whole shim pack and a whole bag of bolts. Like I could almost be upright in aero if I wanted to. There's so much adjustment. And I kept all my original parts. So if I decide to sell this bike and upgrade it, I could take all these parts off and just put my original parts back on. And then
is that out there at some point, maybe before Cozumel?
I don't know. We'll see. I really do like the bike. So if this works out for me, I will have no reason to sell it. And to be honest with you, before I made this investment, I thought about buying another bike. I did. And I went on the Trek website and they were like $8,000, $9,000. And I was like, because I spent $1,700 on these parts. Mm-hmm. I paid $1,600 for the bike when I bought it from Brad Kelly originally, right? But anyway, so I did the math on it. I was like, okay, I could sell my bike. Maybe I get, you know, let's say $2,000 for it because I've bought these other things for it and Brad gave me a smoking deal. Now I'm $6,000 out of pocket to go buy a new bike. The $1,600 didn't sound like a bad idea, right? And so I think I'm going to hold on to it for several years. I mean, I don't have a reason to get rid of it now. And I really like it.
Is it a, I think you said it's a 54 and you should be on a 56. Is that right?
It's a medium. So whatever that means, okay. It's a medium. My gravel bike's a 58. My road bike's a 58. My mountain bike is a medium. And the bike fitter said, I'm right on the cusp. He said, if his words were, if you were going to buy another bike, I would recommend buying a large, but we can make this work. And so I've got a special, not a special, but I bought the alternative seat post where it actually has a 30 millimeter setback on it. So it kind of stretched the bike out a little bit. So now that I've got the saddle back, I've got the handlebars forward. Like I got a lot of adjustment.
You know, I can see your workouts on Garmin and you have it. You're smoking on Garmin. So I think the bike's working fine for you.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good on the trainer. I just got to get it outdoors. anyway, so hey, so the other reason, so the listener knows, the other reason you're on the podcast is we're both racing Oceanside. Yep. In just a few weeks now. So full disclosure, everybody that listens to the podcast knows, obviously we record them in advance. So we're going to be about 1 week delayed in recording. So this podcast will release 2 weeks before the race, right? So we still have a few big workouts to go. I don't know how you're feeling, but I'd like to find out, like, how are you feeling about coming in? I guess I could see your workouts on Garmin as well.
Yeah.
I see your posts on Instagram for sure. And obviously we had a brief conversation before we started the podcast. You have been, in my opinion, you've been very consistent on posting your Instagram, workouts, which I am not. So talk me through, like, how are you feeling?
So I feel terrific. I did start posting my workouts on Instagram. It was supposed to be 6 months out from race day.
Okay.
You and I kind of talked a little bit about it. For me, it was a little bit of motivation, as in why I started posting. I was having a tough time getting motivated for this year, you know, kind of why I signed up for an early race this year. It wasn't necessarily to be my A race, but it was to kind of try to get myself motivated and moving.
Okay.
I'm not much of a social media guy, so I didn't really realize how it works. So when I originally posted my first picture, which I was about 17 pounds heavier than what I am right now.
Wow. You lost 17 pounds.
Yeah. It was kind of to shame myself, motivate myself and get myself ready for training. And again, I didn't realize how social media worked, but within minutes I had friends, coworkers following me where I thought I was nice. Just kind of throwing myself out there to the world, which I didn't really think too much of what other people outside my circle thought of me, but it's really helped me be accountable. And it's actually, my wife's completely supported me through the whole process, calling me out when I'm not training or I'm not riding. So what used to be a negative of, hey babe, I've got to go run for 2 hours or I've got to go ride for 3 hours. She's like, she comes to me and like, hey, when are you going to do this? Cause you need to, you know, nice. Get your posts out there. So I never realized what it was going to do for me, mm-hmm. but it's actually helped me in more ways than what I originally thought. So it's been kind of cool. And then, you know, obviously someday I'll be able to look back at my journey of training and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And kind of say, okay, that's how I got it done. Now, as far as training goes, I've been consistent as in getting a workout in here or there and maybe some double days, but probably not as consistent as what I have been in the past.
Okay.
And I really don't know if I have those twice a days in me anymore. That's not really what drives me and motivates me. I kind of like the concept of working out 45 minutes to an hour a day, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, 2 hours a day or 1:45 a day. I like kind of getting it done early in the morning or when I get home from work, getting out there and getting after it, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And I think, you know, we all deal with that to some degree. I'm not as young as I think that I am from time to time. And I think there's times where listening to your body is so important. And I've had a couple people ask me like, how's training going? And, you know, I'm trying not to be too hard on myself. I'm trying not to be negative, but I'm probably coming into Oceanside the least prepared of any race that I've done in my short history. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually okay with it because, knock on wood, I'm probably the healthiest I've been as well. I'm not dealing with any sort of pain or discomfort or anything like that. And I think it's because I have taken it a little bit easier. Now, I don't know how that's going to translate on race day, but I am feeling pretty good. So I do understand how, you know, your body can only take so much and you should listen to that. And I should remember this, but I can't remember every conversation I've ever had. And you know, I don't know if the listeners know, but we've stayed in contact throughout the past 6 months or so. Yeah. You and I have done the 30-day ab challenge a couple of times, and we're currently actually in it now. We're on day 20 of the 30-day challenge. So we're on the downhill slide. Yep. And at least anybody doesn't know what that is, and we've posted it before, but it's sit-ups, crunches, leg lifts, and planks.
Yep.
And yesterday, I think it was 90 sit-ups, 53. I'm trying to remember, 53 crunches, and then, I don't know, 57 or so leg extensions, and then a 2 minute, 5 second plank, which it's so funny. I was thinking about it. Two minutes is such a weird time period because when you're doing something that you want to do, 2 minutes goes by so fast. But when you're doing something that you don't want to do, it just goes by so slow. Is that your experience?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm in my mentality for race day is very similar to yours, as I have not trained as hard as I have in the past for certain races. And I'm okay with it because, late this year, I'll be a grandfather of three. Mm. So I spend a lot of times with my grandson and, you know, just life That's choices awesome. Have changed. Right.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't change the world for it. So it's like my priorities have changed. But as far as the workouts go, you know, I've been consistent in going to the, ab challenge. I find it interesting that you struggle with the planks. I can't stand the sit-ups.
Yeah, you know? I can knock those sit-ups out. It's the leg lifts and the planks that just and I got to be honest, I don't know that I'm doing the crunches properly. To be honest, it's like my crunch technique is all over the board. I don't even know that I'm doing them right. But hey, I feel sore when I'm done. So I think that I'm doing something right.
Something's better than nothing, right?
Yeah. And while I don't want this about me, I'm very vocal on the podcast about my swim, right? I consider myself to be a bad swimmer, a below average swimmer, a moderate swimmer, a mediocre swimmer, whatever, right? I've used all the terms that there are except for a good swimmer because I'm still not that. But you know this because we text back and forth. So the last four swim sessions. So I follow TriDot training, which means I normally have a prescribed workout time and effort, right? So normally my pool session will be a quick warm up And then it may be, you know, 100s or 150s or 50s at a pace. And then there's like a rest in between. And then you do a cool down and it's like an hour long. Well, the last four times I've been to the pool, I haven't done that. I've just been swimming 2,100 yards, which for some reason I think is the distance. And because an app told me it was, and I don't even know if I'm in a, I don't even know if I'm in a yard pool, to be honest with you. But anyway, I'm swimming 2,100 of something, at the gym continuously. Now, full disclosure, I'm listening to music and I'm wearing my buoyancy shorts, and you know this cause I've told you this, right?
Yep.
But last week I swam 2,100 yards in less than 37 minutes, which netted me a 144 per 100 average pace.
I got it right here.
I know. And what's what it doesn't show is my last 200 was probably my fastest.
Really?
Yes. Because only because I know what I know my effort level, and the reason I say that is I felt strong the entire time, and I was mentally going through the, I was like, okay, I'm 2,100 yards from the finish. I got to sprint to the end. And the reason I'm telling the story is, while yes, I had my buoyancy shorts on, yeah, I had my music, I was really working on rotating my hips, which is something I've never really focused on before. I focused on rotating my shoulders and all that. But what I've been concentrating on recently is rotating my hips. I think that with the ab challenge, with getting a stronger core, has made my swim more streamlined.
Do you think when you rotate your hips, you're getting a longer extension on your arms?
Yes.
And pulling more?
I do. And you know this because you did it the other day. I do the fist drill a lot, which I believe has helped me get a better catch, because it forces you to use your forearm to grab water.
You definitely learn what it's like to grab water with your forearm using the fist drill. And yeah. I've done it at 25. I think I told you about that a couple months ago, but until I kind of did a 50 or whatever I did the other day, I really realized that I was either going to drown or I maybe start pulling with my fist. Now, Mike, you did bring up that this isn't about you, but I would like to say that on the 18th, you did swim the 2,100 yards at a 147 pace, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
You followed up by an indoor bike at for an hour, averaging 20 miles an hour, 20.2.
Yep.
Followed by today, almost a 4 mile run at 9 minute pace. I think you're pretty much ready for that's pretty impressive.
Those are all optimum conditions though. I mean, I appreciate the support, but I don't know. And honestly, I was thinking about it on my run this morning. I'm feeling pretty good, right? And I haven't even been wearing my fast shoes, which is good for at least 20 seconds per mile average pace, right? So I could have been an 840 with my race shoes on, right? My carbon plated race shoes. So we'll see. I've actually given this some thought. So do you have a pair of carbon shoes?
No, I got the big old Pat Hokas.
Okay. So I have a pair. I bit the bullet. Last year, I bought a pair of $250 carbon shoes, right? And my buddy at work bought a pair the same day. And just as they didn't tell us anything about this at Fleet Feet, right? We went in to buy shoes. They sold us shoes, whatever. My buddy, who at the time was running probably five times a week, probably like 4 miles during the week and then a longer run on the weekend, he wore his every day. Like, we didn't talk about it. I didn't wear mine. I think because I was not feeling good and I didn't whatever. He wore his out in like 3 weeks. So he went back to Fleet Feet and they're like, no, you're not supposed to wear these every single day. So now I don't want to wear them at all unless I need to. So this, I'm telling you the story for this. I'm trying to decide if I'm going to wear them in Oceanside or not. And I'm thinking about having both my race shoes and my trainer shoes staged and ready to go. and I will make my decision depending on what my swim and bike split are as to which shoes, because I don't want to wear my carbon shoes if I'm so far out of the, you know, the prime spot that I'm going to waste them 13 miles of tread wear. Does that sound crazy?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah. It's race day. Bring them on.
I'll probably wear them, but I'm just thinking because my trainer shoes, I'm actually running in really well. They're also the same brand. They're super comfortable. I don't know. I'll probably wear them, but anyway. Yeah,
definitely wear them.
Okay. So we're a couple weeks out from Oceanside and neither of us have done it yet. You've never done Oceanside. Okay.
No.
And so you live in California, Sacramento-ish area,
yeah.
Right?
Northern California. Yeah.
Okay. And so I don't know if you know, but I'm flying in. I'm not driving. Yeah. I'm flying in. I actually booked my travel on Sunday. So I'm flying into John Wayne International Airport, which is in Orange County, California, in the Los Angeles area, Tuesday night. And Brian's going to pick me up. Hopefully Brian knows that. Brian's going to pick me up and I'm going to stay with Brian. I actually have to work on Wednesday. We're in an all day meeting. So I'm going to work from Brian's house. Hopefully he has good internet. And then we're driving to Oceanside on Thursday morning. Okay. When are you getting into Oceanside?
I think I'll be down there Thursday morning. I'll probably be right behind you. So I'm either going to leave. I haven't figured out the details, but I'll either leave here Wednesday night and stay somewhere kind of down where you're at or somewhere on the Grapevine and then drive down, or Thursday morning, I'll just get up early and drive down.
Okay. How far is the drive for you?
I think about 6.5.
Okay. 6.5. So you're going to be there Thursday. And I remember from our conversation when you went to Hawaii, you went out in advance and then your wife flew out right before the race, which I thought was genius. Are you doing the same thing? Is she going with you or she's flying in?
She's flying in Friday night.
And okay. She's flying in Friday.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll have to pick her up sometime Friday night or late Friday afternoon, whatever it turns out to be. But it'll give me a chance to kind of get my bike checked in, hit Ironman Village, get our practice swim in, and then I'll pick her up probably, hopefully before dinner-ish.
On Friday.
Friday night, yeah.
Okay. And this is the first race in the North American calendar in 2024. Obviously, there are other international races that have gone on. I think there was I guess it's not North America because Campeche, I think, is in North America. It's in Mexico. It was last weekend. So it's the first race in the United States. We'll just say that, right? And it's Saturday. So the race is Saturday. Ironman Texas 70.3 is on Sunday. So we have those two races that same weekend. So we got to get everything done before Saturday. So we're going down on Thursday. You're going down on Thursday as well. Are you going to practice swim Thursday?
I think you have a plan and I will probably piggyback off of you. I'm nervous about the swim.
Yes.
I'm nervous about the waves. I mean, I've been to Hawaii, but I can see through the waves in Hawaii. I can't see through these waves because they're all salty and all that stuff.
Okay.
If you watch on YouTube last year's race, you'll watch the women pros get thrown backwards. So that's got me nervous.
Yeah. So this is my plan. And I've done a little bit of research. And I first want to say that the 24 athlete guide is still not out, which is fine. It is what it is. So they're saying refer to the 23. So there's a couple of things that I don't know the answer to yet. We feel pretty confident that it's going to be wetsuit legal. We'll just say that because it's going to be cold. What we don't know, and it doesn't say in the athlete guide, what the temperature cutoff is to wear a neoprene hat or what the cutoff is to wear neoprene socks. Are you prepared for both?
I am. I did.
I am too.
I jumped on Amazon and got all that goodies.
Yep. I had the hat. I've not worn it, but I bought the boots this week, put them on, so I'm prepared. So this is my plan. I actually watched, and it's on the Oceanside Ironman page. There's a webinar that they recorded last year for the swim, for the bike, and for the run. So this is where I'm getting all my information from.
Okay.
Just so you know. The swim as it stands is going to be a wave entry, meaning not age group wave, but like ocean wave entry.
Uh-huh.
We're going to swim out. It's 200 yards to get past the wave break is what they're going to say, right? So that first 200 yards is going to be tough. And then it's all right-hand turns from there, which I don't know how you feel about that. I am super excited because I breathe to the right. And so that actually should favor me quite a bit. Which side do you breathe to?
So I breathe to the right. And if I think about it, the only problem, like you're going to swim that 200 and then whatever you're going to take a right along that first buoy.
It's all right turns.
Right. So, but after that first right turn, I think will be the only time you're probably looking into the sun. Did they say that on the?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I make right turns, which I also like because the waves will be coming. Once you make that right turn, the waves will be coming from your left side. So you won't be turning into whatever rolling waves are. Right.
Correct. Yeah. So it's perfect for me.
Yeah.
So this is my strategy. They're going to open it up. You can, obviously it's the open ocean. You can swim it whenever. Okay. I'm not swimming the entire course. I'm going to practice the wave entry four times. I'm going to get in, practice, and I'm just going to swim right back to shore. And then I'm going to do it again and then back to shore. Because what I don't know and I need to figure out is how do you know when to jump over the wave and how do you know when to dive under the wave, right? And so this is what they taught me on the webinar. And so it may be common knowledge, but it wasn't to me. When you do dive under, make sure your hands are out in front of you. That way you, if you aren't deep enough and you're shallow, you can either grab the sand or you can push yourself up. What you don't want to do is dive under a super shallow wave and hit your face in the sand. That would not be good.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to spend my entire practice just practicing the entry.
So
I'm going to swim out 200 yards, right back to shore.
Okay.
Out 200 yards, right back to shore.
So you'll swim out past the waves.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe whatever, 10, 20 yards past the wave break, just kind of so you can settle in.
Yep.
And then turn around,
come back in. Come back right. Yep. I'm not swimming the entire course. I don't care about the rest of the course. I know the sun, and honestly, we probably won't practice it at the same time of day. And so it's not going to do me any good because the conditions will be different. All I'm worried about is the water temperature and getting past the wave. So that's what I'm going to focus on.
I'm telling you right now, depending on how our practice swim goes, when we run into that water, don't be surprised if I run off to the side and splash around like a 5-year-old trying to get acclimated into the cold water before I take
out. No. That's the other thing they said. Because it's the ocean, you can actually get in the water race morning off to the side before the race starts. You can actually get out and you can acclimate yourself to the water temperature.
Okay.
Which is another super cool thing because normally, you know, it's a pier or some crowd area to where you don't have that ability I guess it's just an open beach that we're going to run across a mat, maybe through the blow up deal, but the rest of the beach is going to be open.
Now you're staying with Brian?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is he racing too?
He is.
And has he raced this before?
He has.
Okay. So we can kind of pick his brain a little bit.
Yep. And he actually recorded a couple weeks ago. He recorded a race preview. But yeah, he's going to give me some inside tips. Lisa Stelly, who's been on the podcast before, she's also racing. She's part of a relay team. And so Brian, Lisa, and I, they rented a 3-bedroom Airbnb and I'm staying with them. I'm taking the 3rd bedroom. I raced with them in Oregon last year.
Okay.
They're my They're my guides to get to the water, because when I take my glasses off, I can't see anything. So I basically just like put a hand on a shoulder and just follow them to the water edge.
Well, maybe you're my entry to Kona Bowl someday. I can.
I don't think that works that way.
No.
No.
I'll just hand you a piece of rope and we'll go that direction.
Yeah. So those are the things that I'm concerned about. Do you have any other concerns about the swim?
No, just the waves start kind of like what you walk through, getting through over, whether I go over, whether I go under, the acclimation to the water was great input that I can get in there race morning.
Yeah.
That'll help me a lot settle down. Once I get past the wave break, I'll be fine. I'll settle in and get around that pier, and that looks like all cruising in after that.
Yeah. So I think the strategy is going to be, we need to do the practice swim on Thursday.
Okay.
For two reasons. One, if it goes well, then we can get our wetsuits pretty dry before the race on Saturday. But if it doesn't go well, then we have the ability to do it again on Friday.
Yeah.
Right.
I like that.
So. Now what I have to figure out is when I'm putting my bike together. So I'm flying, like I said, I'm flying to Orange County. I would like to say I could put my bike together on Wednesday, but it's going to come down to what Brian has the ability to help me get from Orange County to Oceanside. I may have to leave my bike in the box, because I have to take the box either way, because I'm flying home out of San Diego.
Okay.
So I have to put,
everything with you.
Yeah. The thing I have the most anxiety about is putting my bike back together race day so that I can be ready. Cause I have a 10:30 flight home on Sunday, which means I need to be at the airport by 8:30 Sunday, which means we need to leave the house by 7:30.
Yeah.
Right. Which means I can't put my bike together race morning or Sunday morning. It has to be back in the box the night before. So that's the thing I have the most anxiety about at this point.
So do you have a hard shell bike case?
I do.
So you're going to break it down to the frame, the two wheels, and then you got to kind of loosen the handlebars and kind of spin a little bit.
No, you have to take them off.
Oh,
the only thing that is holding the handlebars to the bike at that point are the brake cables.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Now, since the last time I took the bike to Oregon, I actually bought a kit, and I can't think of the name of it or where it's from, but before I would wrap the bike in pool noodles, zip ties, and bubble wrap. Well, I bought an actual bike protector kit. It's all like foam padding with Velcro straps. It's designed to be reused. And so I'm actually pretty excited. That should save me both time and weight. And I need to talk to Brian to figure out what tools I need to bring and which tools he'll have. Because obviously if he has bike tools that I can borrow, I won't need to bring a bunch of tools.
Yeah.
Whereas when I went to Oregon, I had to bring all my own bike tools and all that stuff is heavy. And you can't carry a torque wrench on the plane these days, no. Right? That's not going to work.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. You do have a lot. Have you started packing yet?
No. Tomorrow I'm going to print out my checklist. So okay. I found my checklist from Oregon from last year. I'm going to make a few adjustments to it. I'm going to get it printed out and then I'm going to start putting things together, because this weekend I'm going to get all my stuff down from the attic, start getting it organized, start getting stuff checked off. Because we're 2 weeks away.
Yeah.
Just over.
Yeah. No, I got it. Literally when we get done tonight, I'm going to start putting stuff out because I mean, like you and I have talked about, I go to New York next week for a week.
Yeah.
So
you're going to be pedaling around NYC.
Yep. So I'm kind of getting nervous, like on my checklist, like, okay, I got to start putting these things out and these things out and start, because you know, you'll forget something. And then you got to,
you know, yeah. I mean, I've got a pretty solid checklist. I don't think I forgot anything last year. I'm like Santa Claus. I got to check the list twice, the whole thing. Okay. So we've covered the swim. So I learned something about the bike course that is different than any other course.
So let me go back to the transition.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I don't think because we get out in the marina, we're not going to run through sand. Do we need a towel at transition to like get sand off your feet?
They said that there would be carpet.
Okay.
But they said there will not be, this is what they said, and I'm glad you asked this question. They said there will not be a rinse off station. They recommended if you were nervous about it, bring an extra water bottle.
Okay.
So have an extra water bottle in transition, probably one with like one of those sports tops to where you can kind of spray it a little bit. Yeah. Versus just like a free flowing. Okay. And then a towel. So one of the things that I have to think about is I don't normally cycle with socks. Depending on the temperature, I might have to keep my feet warm.
Have you gotten any rides outside this year yet?
No. Well, I rode my gravel bike. Gravel bike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you wear socks?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that was about a month ago in the mountains.
It was super cold. Yeah, yeah. It was super cold.
I'll bet you whatever we face in Oceanside isn't going to be, it's still going to be what, maybe in the 60s? I don't think it'll be 60s. That cold. Yeah, I don't think we'll need socks.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm gonna bring them just in case. But whatever socks if I put socks on, they're gonna be the same socks I run in.
Yeah.
Right? I do have cycle socks, but I wouldn't run in those. I'm gonna bring arm sleeves and calf sleeves. The calf sleeves I'm for sure gonna put on. And I'll probably put the arm sleeves on. They recommended bringing a jacket just in case on the webinar.
Do you put the calf sleeves on prior to the swim or after the swim?
So in Oregon, I actually wore them under my wetsuit.
How'd that work out?
Worked out fine.
Yeah. I wouldn't see how those would affect you with your wetsuit being on.
Mm-mm. Also, in Oregon, the very first time I wore a two-piece tri kit. I went ahead and wore both my heart rate monitor and my tri jersey under my wetsuit. And so obviously it was wet.
Yeah.
But I didn't have to fumble with it, putting it on because it's like a quarter zip or a half zip. So it takes a little bit to get it on. And I was like, I don't want to mess with that with wet skin or whatever. And it worked out fine. I wasn't super cold or anything like that, but it was also a warmer day in Oregon than we're going to see in Oceanside.
Yeah. No, I do the two piece. Sounds very similar suit. And I like it underneath the wetsuit too. Just saves me a little bit of time and typically not that cold coming out. Now I still think 60s will be okay in Oceanside. Obviously if it's windy, that might bring a little bit of chill to it, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking about putting my arm sleeves on underneath my wetsuit. Just yeah. So I don't have to mess with those either.
Yeah. And I don't know if those would come off when you peel off your wetsuit or how tight those are compared to the calf sleeves, I'm assuming are compression sleeves.
They're pretty tight. And because my trash shirt or jersey is a half sleeve, so it's not like a tank sleeve, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The sleeves go underneath the jersey. And okay. So when they should stay in place when my wetsuit comes off.
Okay.
I like that. In theory, in my head, that's how it works. How it works in my head. Okay. Are you going to practice transitions before the race?
I practiced transition last weekend, and then hopefully I will get another practice transition in Sunday this weekend.
Okay.
And then, this weekend's my last weekend. I'm home before race weekend. So
I gotcha. Yeah, I have a race rehearsal this weekend, so it's like a 3-hour outdoor ride and a 40-minute brick run. So I won't be practicing transitions this weekend, but I will be practicing transitions the weekend before the race. So I'll get my shoes rubber banded to my bike. I'll do the whole run out barefoot, slide my shoes. I'll practice that a couple of times, get myself dialed in. I'll feel pretty good.
Do you have any secrets to transition?
You know, I would say not secrets. Practicing transition is key, obviously. From swim to bike, I do the standard thing where I will put my helmet on my aero bars with my sunglasses inside. I'll have my shoes clipped in, rubber band to my frame. Now, I've said on the podcast before, and I bought these shoes, Richard, off of Amazon for like $50. I actually bought a second pair because I like them so much and I was afraid I wouldn't be able to find them again. It's one wide Velcro strap across the bridge of your foot. Uh-huh. And when you open it up, there's another small Velcro tab that holds the shoe open. So my foot slides in so easy to the shoe. And then it has a nice big loop on the back that I can rubber band to the frame pretty easy. So the shoes will stay flat in position while I'm running the bike to the mount line. So that's kind of my strategy. Now I need to make a few accommodations for my nutrition. I need to figure out like, okay, I'm going to take obviously some fluid and a gel before the swim. What am I going to take in transition? Am I going to take another, energy, drink or whatever? I have to think that through. I don't know. What about you? Anything special?
No, I mean, like you said, I'll take a gel and something to drink before the swim. I'll probably hit a gel and I use the scratch, but I'll probably take a good swig of that. And then the only thing I was thinking about is a light jacket coming out of transition. But no, I'll have my suit on underneath my wetsuit. I don't use the socks. The only thing I guess I'll look at is the day before is because it's down by the beach, how clean that transition is. Because I don't put my shoes on my bike. So running out barefooted or in my shoes, which one I'll do, that'll be the only thing. But.
Yeah, because I don't know if we're on a pavement surface or if we're on grass for the transition. We won't know until we get there, I guess. So there is one thing I've learned that is different that is gonna be a consideration, especially if we decide to wear a jacket. Okay. And that is anybody that is at all familiar with Oceanside should know the bike course is on Camp Pendleton. Mm-hmm. Camp Pendleton is going to require that we wear our race bib while on the bike.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You cannot get on the base without your race bib on. So if you decide to wear a jacket, my guess would be your bib has to be on over your jacket.
Interesting.
So
I typically don't even wear my bib during the bike. I don't put it
on. I don't either. It's not something that I normally do. And the reason why I don't normally do it is my bike to run transition, I keep everything together with my race belt. Right. Yeah. And so I loop my hat to it and so everything is together. So I just grab it and run. Well, that's not going to work this time because I'm going to have it on. And so what I was thinking about is I thought about wearing a jacket because I bought a jacket to wear and it's a light jacket. I could take it off while I'm riding the bike, but not if that belt is on because that's going to be another thing to mess with. And so that's a whole nother dynamic that will have to be considered.
That's interesting. Cause with all the stickers we have on the bike with our numbers and stuff like that, I'm surprised that they need the bib number and with our time tip on there too. That's just, it doesn't seem necessary, but it is Pendleton. So
yeah, they brought it up on the webinar. And I think the reason I wanted to talk about it is one, it's something I've never had to deal with before. But two, it's just another reason why we should always read the athlete guide. Now, the athlete guide is not available yet. I watched the webinar, which was available, which is kind of in lieu of.
Yeah.
But that would be one of those things that imagine the scenario where you come out of the water, you hit a good time, you blaze through transition, and you get all the way to the bike out, and they're turning you around to put your race bib on, which is something you've never had to do before.
Yeah.
And you can't understand why the volunteers are telling you to, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm playing that out of my head.
Yeah.
And I could see where that could be a cause of frustration to somebody who 100%. Is thinking, oh, the volunteer doesn't know what they're doing. Why do I got to go back? Blah, 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 blah. So we should always, as athletes, be aware of the unique course rules. And this mm-hmm. happens to be one of them.
Now, will you go to like the athlete's guide?
100%. I will go to the athlete briefing.
Okay.
Yep. I always do. And this is probably something that they will cover because it's not normal. The other thing, and I did hear about this before, but I didn't understand how strict the enforcement of it is. There's a zone that you cannot go more than 25 miles an hour, right?
Yeah.
And this is how they're enforcing it. So we all know there's no drafting and there's no this. And it's an honor system and there's course marshals out there, all that, right? No, 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 no. They have a timing mat set up at the beginning and the end. And if your elapsed time between those two markers is faster than 25 miles an hour, you're DQ'd. There's no penalty. You are disqualified, they said.
You're done. From my understanding, my understanding is there's a tall hill. The biggest hill climb on that course is just before that.
Yeah. And the way they described it is it's downhill into a turn and the turn banks the opposite direction you would think that it would bank, which is why there's a speed limit, which I still can't get my head wrapped around how it banks opposite that you would think that it would. But that's how they described it in the webinar. So we definitely need to be aware of that. Huh?
Yeah, it's on Pendleton, so we're not going to be able to drive that before race day. You're just going to find out come race day.
You're going to find out come race day, which is probably why I obviously know this. I don't race the same course twice. This would be one of those times where having raced the course before is going to be a significant advantage.
Right. Now, I wasn't aware that how hilly this course was. Are you familiar with how hilly this course is?
Well, I'll say this. I have a Tax smart trainer, and I have the Tax app. Okay. And so I've been riding either the Galveston or the Waco course. Well, I found the Oceanside course the other day, and so I just clicked it on. I thought my brake locked up on me like 2 minutes into the ride. I'm like, what the hell? Yeah, apparently it is pretty hilly.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize that. I knew it had one or two hills in there. And then I ran into a guy at the gym the other day that had done it before. And he goes, oh, hilly course. And I'm thinking, I haven't really put the work in for that kind of thing yet.
Yeah, nobody's really talked about that to my like before. So I don't know about that. But yeah, so those are the two things on the bike course that we need to be aware of. Have to wear your race bib and be very aware of the 25 mile an hour zone. They even recommended possibly hitting your lap on your computer so that you knew what your average speed was during. And it has to be your average speed. So they even recommended, like, if you topped out, just hit the brakes, like slow down or come to a stop. Right. I'm like, oh my God, like they're serious about it. So we need to know that. Okay. But the good thing is when we get to the run looks pretty easy as far as a half marathon goes.
Yeah. I think for the most part, the run is flat. There's a couple hill. I think there's like one hill that we duplicate coming off the beach up into like some housing development or something like that. It's a hard right turn that you got to go up. But yeah, from what I understand, it should be just huge fan support too throughout that whole run course.
Well, the thing I noticed about it, of course, it says it's like a 277 feet of gain, which is not a lot at all. there's not a lot of turns. It looks like it's a lot of long, straight running and then a turn. And then, of course, it's two loops. But you're right. I've heard the same thing, that it's very well spectated and should be very able to get the energy from the crowd.
So I haven't run, I haven't done that specific course, but I've done other like marathons or half marathons down in that area. And usually there's nights beach breeze that comes into the kind of cool the day off on you. Yeah. And it comes from your side. So it's not going to be a headwind or a tailwind, but it's going to come from the side and kind of cool you off.
Gotcha.
Let me ask you about your bike real quick.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit earlier about the hydration part.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to, you're going to use your nutrition? Do you have like a bento box or how do you?
Yeah. So I have, the box behind the seat post on the Speed Concept, that's all supplies. And there'll be tubes, CO2. So that's useless to me at that point, right?
Right.
I will have two water bottles behind my saddle, and I'm going to get the extra large bottles. In that, I have been training with UCAN products, thanks to Scott Sugimoto like 2 years ago. So I will have a mixture of lemon lime Gatorade and UCAN's lemon lime hydration powder, right? So I mix the two together. So I'll take those things in. I will also have the UCAN, they call them gels, but there's nothing gel about them. And I have the orange and I got the pineapple flavor, which I'm going to try this weekend. So I'll have a couple of those. Now, I will likely have those in my shorts or my jersey pockets, depending on how I go, because they're bigger gels. They take up too much room to put in my bento box. In my bento box, I will have my goo gels. I still take the salted caramel goo gels on a regular basis. So that's how I will have all of my nutrition set up for the bike. What about you?
I have one bottle. Well, I have one on the down tube. And then what is it? The cross tube that comes down from the.
Yep. Yeah. Like the seat post tube.
Yeah. And then I've got one on the backside. So I'll have three bottles with me. And then I have all my goos, which I'm not partial to anything. I usually have whatever I grabbed from the previous race.
Okay.
And there you go. And then I do have, I guess, some of those stingers because I like a little bit more solid food than just the typical stuff. And then in my back bottle, I usually have scratch in there. Okay. So I'll probably have two bottles of water, a scratch, and then my gels, and then I'll pick up stuff along the ride. I'm not as dialed in on my nutrition as I should be, meaning that I don't really have a game plan as how many calories I should consume per hour, per mile, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But typically I've got my Garmin set up for every 10 minutes of a drink of scratch, just to take a sip. And then usually about every hour I'll take a gel or stinger or something like that.
Yeah. See, I usually go, my Garmin set up to go off at 15 minutes and I'll usually go, every 45 for a gel. And then, normally when I had the center hydration, I would drink a bottle an hour. And so I would usually have about a little bit left. Now, this time is going to be different because I'm going with a different bottle setup. And so I'm going to have to drink one bottle every 25 miles. So it's like a mile, it's like an hour and a half. How long do you think the bike is going to take? Do you have an idea?
340? Is that right? I was going to look I'm kind of going off my Hawaii time, but I don't really remember what that was. What about, remind me, do you stop on the bike or do you just ride through all the way through?
All the way through, buddy.
All right.
Enough all the
said.
Way through.
Enough
yeah.
said.
Yeah. I'm shooting for and this is, I'm basing this off of my Oregon race. I'm shooting for a 245 bike split.
Okay. 21. Yeah. Oh, I'm probably 330-ish. I mean, you're hitting 20s and I'm hitting 17, so.
Anything can happen, though. In the hills and all that. I'm a pretty good climber, though.
There's that one hill that I've been told that there'll be people walking the bikes. So you just got to be ready to hammer down on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a pretty good climber. I'm shooting for a 245. Now, I could come in at a 315. Who knows, right? But 245 is my goal. How are you going to manage your effort? Are you going to manage heart rate or power? Or
I'm going to try to stick around, for me, 135 watts, which should put me right around 18 miles an hour.
So you're going to go by power. You're going to shoot by power.
Yeah. Yeah. When it comes to the run, I'll completely go to heart rate.
Okay. I got you. Yeah. I'm going to go power on the bike as well, but I would like to average 170. On the run, I'm thinking about running by pace.
And what's your pace goal?
9 minutes.
I like it.
I'd like to run a 9 minute pace.
I like it.
I would like to run a 158 half marathon.
You want to break that too.
I do. And I think I ran a 159 in Oregon. And so I would like to run a 158.
Okay.
So now I'd like a lot of things in life too that I don't get.
So, and just going back to your bike, I should be probably close to the 315, 320 where I should be.
That sounds about right.
So my California time was 640. So I should be 320, 310, somewhere around there.
Yeah. I didn't want to say anything, but 340 sounded like a lot longer than I would have thought it would take.
Yeah. Yeah. So, So if you stick around did you say 170 on
170? Uh-huh.
And then have you done that in the past? 170 with a 9 minute mile? Is that what you were at in Oregon?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm trying to think of your recap from Oregon, but I think you slowed down the back 3 miles?
The run?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a pretty good blister on my right foot. And so the last 3 miles of the run were pretty tough.
So it wasn't a nutrition thing, or it wasn't overdoing it on the bike thing. It was more just handling the blister piece.
Yep.
Yeah. So my goal, and I've always kind of put a time on my race on the run piece. You know, going into Hawaii last year, I was running 830 miles, and I kind of thought that a sub 2 was possible. And then I went out and blew up on the run. And it was a lot of it was heat, not so much over biking. But I think I'm going to take a different approach on this race, where I'm going to shoot more for 10:30 on the first 10K. And then evaluate, and then try to come in hotter on the backside. So I'm going to take the first half of the race on a slower side than I've ever thought of.
Okay.
So, and I've been actually kind of working towards that on my training runs, is trying to stay anywhere from 10 to 11 minute miles, kind of with the slower concept of running, 80% or whatever it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
With that kind of thought process. So I've really kind of lowered a lot of my targets with the bike and the run, to try to see if I can negative split my half marathon. Every Ironman I've ever done, I have flopped on the run.
Mm.
And I don't want to have that feeling this time. That's really what takes me off about Ironman. It's not, I love getting from A to B, but I always feel like I have mentally given up on the run, or broken down, or however you want to call it.
Yeah.
And I want to prevent that this time. So even if I average 11 minute mile for this, I would still PR by 10 minutes. So
that would be good. I was looking back at my times because you can't keep up with them. I ran a 159 in Oregon, which was a PR by probably 15 minutes. And I didn't have a bad run in Chattanooga. Are you going to do a run walk? Or no. are you just going to run slow?
Uh-huh. Just going to go out there. My ultimate goal is to keep for the first 10K is keep my heart rate right around 128, 130.
Okay.
So it's all going to be heart rate driven. And then try to evaluate, you know, pick it up after at mile six from 6 to 9 or 6 to 10, and then kind of just let it rip after 10 to 13.
Okay. So are you carrying nutrition with you? Or are you going to take from aid stations? What are you going to do?
So I do carry a bottle with me when I run, you know, even in training, I just have my own hand water bottle because I like to have water available whenever I'm at, and I'll have gels in one of those, the little pocket of the bottle holder, you know, the hand thing.
Yep.
But then I'll pick up a couple of the Mortons on the way, you know, just so I have them.
Okay.
And hopefully my end goal is to end up with more Mortons in my pocket than I started with. I got to get some of that money back.
That's funny. Yeah. And this could be super dangerous. I think I'm going to change my hydration plan for this race.
Okay.
And this could be an epic fail. Who knows what'll happen in Oregon. And I think in Chattanooga as well, I had both a handheld bottle and a race belt with a bottle, which is something I saw Lionel Sanders do. And so I thought, hey, if it's good enough for Lionel Sanders, it's good enough for me. So I'm doing it on a YouTube video. The problem is that's a lot of weight to be carrying around. I know it doesn't sound like it, but it is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a disorienting feeling. And so I'm thinking about, and so what happens is I carry all my, I'm self-supported at that point. I don't take anything from the aid stations. I just stay to the right or whatever. I'm thinking about only carrying the hand bottle, putting my gels in my pockets of my kit, and then picking up fluid every other station along the way. Because I think the time that it would take, I think would even itself out by not having to carry it with me. I use Gatorade Endurance anyway, so that's what they have on course. So I think I'll be fine.
Yeah. And I think the aid stations are almost every mile and a half.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's an out and back and you're double. And so I think with the fluid that I'm carrying, I think I'll be okay. Again, it could be an epic fail.
Well, you said you trained with Gatorade already and they're going to have Gatorade on the course. So you should be okay.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah. But in Oregon, I didn't slow down for anything. I didn't stop at a single aid station. And so it's going to be, can I take fluid from the aid station and still run sub 2? I think so.
Do you feel like you're going to have to slow down to refill your bottles, or do you feel like you'll be able to kind of?
I'm just going to take the cup. Nope. What I'm going to do is my plan is to take fluid every other station. So I'll be drinking fluid out of my bottle less. Cause normally what I'll do is I'll take a sip from my bottle every mile. That's how I hydrate.
Is it on
all my training runs?
Water or Gatorade?
It's Gatorade.
Okay.
So I drink Gatorade.
Okay. So just during that rest stop or water stations, you're just going to take a sip of their Gatorade rather than your own bottle.
There you go. Every other one.
Okay. And I think there's 6 or 7 on course, right?
I think so.
Yeah. You should be all right.
I think so. It's just a matter of if it works for me, or if they're, you know, out of Gatorade by the time I get there, or I can't manage to drink and run at the same time out of that cup. I don't know. Like it could go 6 ways of the wrong way.
You'll probably figure out early if you can drink out of that cup. And if you can't, then you're just going to find yourself slowing down a smidge, unscrewing and trying to pour that cup inside.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be one sticky mess.
Sticky mess at the end.
It will be. Yeah. And I think in Chattanooga, what I did was I ditched my hand bottle when I ran out. Like I drank the hand bottle first and then I just tossed it in the trash. And then I just had the bottle in my belt. But it's just, I don't know, it's such an awkward thing. Because if you don't have it super tight, it feels weird on your hips.
That's what I was going to ask you. I don't run with a belt, but I have in the past, and I remember it kind of bouncing around on the back with me a little bit.
Yeah, it has to be super tight, and that can be weird. And so I think I'm going to try. I think I'm not going to use it this time and see what happens.
Yeah. Do you know of any spectators out there?
I know that Brian's crew is going to be out there, and they'll have some, cause he said they'll have a bunch of people there if we need like Sherpa duty, and I can give my bike claim ticket and they'll pick up my stuff from transition or whatever. I know I'm in the, I follow TriDot training, like I said, so I'm in the, I am TriDot Facebook group, and I'm a TriDot ambassador. So on the ambassador page, I know there's a couple people that are going to be out spectating. So I don't know a lot of people that are going to be out there, but a few.
You have enough people out there though, that you could probably give someone your belt that you could give, you know, your bottle.
Yeah, that's a good point. You gotta be careful. Gotta be careful. If you take aid from a spectator, you get DQ'd. Now, if they happen to have a volunteer shirt on by chance, that's not cheating.
So, do you have any expectations for transition in the swim from bike to run?
No, I wouldn't say expectations. I want to be efficient. And I don't know what that means. I had really good transitions in Oregon. I had horrible transitions in Chattanooga. I mean, they were horrible. So I would like to be somewhere in between. Now, what I did here on the webinar is it's a long run from the water's edge to swim in. You have to run the entire length of transition to come in. And so while we don't get to pick our spots in transition, I am going to think about when we get there, when we're checking in, to figure out where do I want to be. If I could choose, where would I want to be? And I might choose to not check in as early as I could to get a favorable number.
Okay.
But I also want to be by Brian. Lisa will be on the relay team, so she'll be in a special section. So I don't know.
Okay.
What have you given any thought?
No. No, I haven't. I still need to do quite a bit of homework on it.
So I think I'm as prepared as I can be.
No, it sounds like you've already done the athlete's briefing and all that stuff. I've kind of done some reading on it, but I definitely haven't gone through the webinar or anything like that.
Yeah. I definitely listened. I don't know that I listened to the run webinar, but the run's the run. I mean, it is what it is. But I definitely, the swim and the bike were pretty educational, so I would check those out. I gave you the important parts, but
on the run piece, have you figured out where Lionel's going to pass you?
I don't know. I do think he's racing. I saw Team Saunders posted a YouTube video today. I just watched it on how to navigate the new Ironman Tracker app. Have you seen they've updated the app?
No, I think you talked about it maybe in your last Friday's podcast.
Yeah. And so this is actually really cool. They recorded a video that you can share with your loved ones so that they know how to track you. Okay. Right. Because we don't track ourselves. Right. But my wife has only used it a handful of times. And there's a lot of people that I know through work or whatever. They're like, hey, I'd like to track you. How does that work? I'm just going to share their video because they walk right through how to use it. And I want to say when they were going through the examples, they loaded Lionel Sanders in to the tracker. So I think he's racing.
Yeah. I believe you had an interaction with him at one point from a distance.
I did. I passed him. That's not true. He was going the opposite direction. I saw him on the bike and I saw him on the run course. And so I was headed out. So on Oregon, it's not an out and back necessarily, but it's an out. You cross a bridge and then you do like a figure eight twice and then you come back across the bridge. And so I was going out across the bridge. He was coming into the finish line. So what that meant was he was only 11 or 12 miles ahead of me on the race course, which I thought was pretty good. I was within 12 miles of him.
Right.
I mean, that's not bad.
Well, I'm thinking he's going to be coming in off the bike when I'm going on the bike.
It could be. I was really surprised because I did see him on the bike course. He passed me as I was going out at some point. So I think he was maybe 30 miles ahead of me on the bike course and only 12 miles. So I think I closed the gap on him. Did I close the gap on him?
Yep. Yep. Now, was he going, was it when he passed you, was it going head to head or was it he coming up from behind you?
No, it was an out and back, similar deal. So the Oregon course was an out and back. And so he was coming back towards town. I was headed out towards town, but I want to say I was 15 miles out. So he had 15 miles to go. So that's 30 miles. So he was 20 something miles ahead of me, 26 miles ahead of me, if I'm doing the math right. And then he was only 12 miles ahead of me on the run course. So I closed the gap. Yeah. That's what I'm going to say. That's my claim. Yeah, I closed the gap on him.
Well, and he's driving.
I was running him down.
He's driving the Mercedes and you got the Toyota.
For sure.
Have you ever been out on the course and been passed by one of the pros, like on a two-loop course?
I'm sure that when I raced Ironman Texas, I for sure it happened, right? Because it's a long course. It was a pro race. I was passed by so many people on the course. I would imagine that I got passed by athletes, pro athletes on the bike and probably the run course because the run course is three loops.
Okay.
They might have already been done by the time I hit the run course. For sure the bike course.
I've been passed, well, one race that I can think of specifically, and I think it was Vineman back in the day. Maybe it was Santa Rosa, but they passed me like I was standing still. Like you can hear the vroom, 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 vroom. And then all of a sudden they just, and you look at your legs and I feel like I'm pedaling just as fast as they are.
Yeah.
But they just go past you so quick. It's amazing.
Well, I mean, and it's like a lot of things when you're really good at something and you make it look so easy, like an artist or whatever. You say that I remember getting passed on the run course by some pro females, by a couple of them. Because I was looking for Amy Henderson and I didn't see her, but I'm sure she passed me at one point. So we'll see. It's going to be a pro race. Who knows what'll happen? We might get to see some out there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then Mike Riley's from down there too, so I'm kind of hoping to have a little sighting from him as well.
Oh, you know what? Actually, I heard he is going to be there.
Okay.
Because I am a Tryout ambassador, which Tryout is the official training platform of Ironman,
and he's
the chief motivational officer for Tri-Dot. And so I got a invitation. So I got to get with Brian and figure out what our schedule is. I'm supposed to work a shift in the Tri-Dot tent. And they said that he would be there at some point.
Okay.
So I don't know when, so he's definitely going to be at the venue, which is super cool.
I was kind of hoping so. During Ironman California, I got a picture with him prior to the swim. And I had made to an 8x10, so I'd love to get that thing signed and put it on my wall.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, I mean, all indications are he will be there at the race.
So, which is super cool. So you got your run, you're going to average 9 minutes or shoot for 9 minutes.
That's the goal.
1:58. What do you have a total time for the whole race? Or is it kind of leery because you don't know what to expect in the swim?
I don't know what to expect in the swim, but I have done the math in my head. And if I'm able to do what I want to do, right, which we don't know that I can, it would put me at a 5:45.
Okay.
So 545 is my quote unquote goal, but it could be anywhere from 545 to 645, to be honest. Like it could be, there's a wide range.
Well, yeah, because you don't know, well, for, you don't know how the first 200 of the swim's going to go. And then how we will settle into that after, I mean, our adrenaline's going to be pumping a little bit after those waves. So you have to get your body, your heart rate down and all that stuff. And then the hills will be a little questionable in the, on the bike. And then the fact that they got a big hill that you can't really recover on necessarily and gain speed, you're going to have to slow down and go through it.
Right. Yeah.
And like you said, long transition on the swim to bike. Mm-hmm. So there'll be some interesting challenges. What time do we get in the water? Is it 7:30-ish?
That's a great question. I don't know. And I have looked at the event guide. The event schedule. I didn't pay that much attention to it. I'm going to get in the water as early as I can.
Okay.
I don't know what your strategy is.
Yeah, I like to get in as early as I can. I like to try to be a little with the faster people because that kind of keeps me in line with them, gets me swimming faster, and then it keeps me out of the heat of the day as the sun, those clouds start going away.
That's exactly. And I can't think about it till just now, but that is normally my strategy. I want to get in early because I want to be on the run course as early as possible. But since we're swimming into the sun, getting in the water later might be advantageous.
Yeah.
Because the sun would be a little higher. I don't think it's going to make that. You know what the thing about it is? It doesn't matter because I can't see in the water anyway. So I don't think swimming in the sun is going to cause me any problems.
Do you have tinted goggles you use?
I do. They're tinted.
I do too. Yeah. I don't think the sun will be that much, and especially, I mean, it's only probably what, maybe 300-400 yards that we have to swim with the sun in our eyes.
My eyes are closed the entire time. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I mean, basically closed the entire time.
Look out for the pier, Mike.
I don't anticipate there being that much of a problem. I'm going to get in the water as early as I can. I would like to be in the water within 30 minutes of the start of the race.
Do you have a go-to meal Friday night? Or when you start carb loading? Or
yeah, that's a good point. I normally carb load two nights before.
Okay.
So what I would like to do is eat some pasta Thursday night and then have a reasonably good breakfast Friday morning. And then I will switch to a very, I have meal replacement shakes that I drink normally. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take some of those with me. So lunch, I will have a very light lunch on Friday. And then it's meal replacement shake Friday night. And then Saturday morning, I normally eat an Eggo waffle with peanut butter. So we're going to be staying at a house. So hopefully I can get that. If not, I'll eat something very similar. And then it's going to be mostly fluids and gels the rest of the way.
Yep. And then what time do you wake up race day?
Well, see, again, I'm at an advantage because I'm picking up two time zones.
Yeah.
And so I normally get up at 4 a.m. Well, that's 2 a.m. California time.
Yep. So you're going to be sleeping in that day.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be. Now, I'll be going to bed early, which is great, right? And so I never really gave that a lot of thought until I went to Oregon. And I was like, this is the way to go. Like, I'm going west from now on. Like, how far west can I go?
You can go to Hawaii and pick up half a day.
Maybe. maybe that's next on the agenda. I don't know. I think I haven't said it yet on the podcast. I think I'm going to race Florida 70.3 in December. I think I'm going to do the first U.S. race and the last U.S. race this year. I think I'm going to do that. So we'll see. And then next year, I'm locked in, already committed, haven't signed up yet because they haven't opened it, but I am doing Cozumel 2025 full distance.
You got that itch to go the full distance again, huh?
Going to do it. I'm going to do it. So that's just going to happen for me. So
does that replace the 50 mile, the ultra marathons that you were kind of knocking around.
No, no, I think I still can get that done because it's a November race and I don't really need to start training until what? July,
okay.
August. And so I think I can get an ultra in early. So if I could get an ultra in April or May, I think I'd be golden.
Okay.
Yeah. I actually signed up for a trail run last weekend. So last weekend, I went to a birthday party for a friend of my wife's, and one of her coworkers and her husband, who my wife also has worked with in the past, had run a recent half marathon. And so I really didn't know anybody at the party a lot. I've tried to do the best I could to be social, whatever. But when they showed up, I was like, hey man, how was that half marathon? So we got to talking and one thing led to another. And he was like, hey, there's this trail race coming up. And we started talking about it. And I was like, yeah, we could do that. And he's like, really? I'm like, yeah, totally. We could totally do that. It's like 20K, right? Not too bad. And so then he goes around, tells everybody about, we're going to do this trail run, right? I'm like, that's cool, whatever. And so like an hour and a half later, I'm sitting like checking my Facebook or whatever. And he walks over and he says, hey, are we really doing this? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, well, I don't want to sign up. And then the next time I run into you, you're like, oh no, I was just kidding. And I was like, no, I'll sign up right now. Like I literally will sign up. So I did, I signed up. So May 4th, I think it is. We're nice. Doing a 20 mile or 20K. So it's like, I don't know, it's like 12 miles or something like that, right? So that'll be my second official trail race.
So, and so you kind of got into the trail racing in the last month or two.
I've done one.
Right. And then you, and then you got your gravel bike.
Did my gravel.
You're starting to hit that. So are really you starting it. To enjoy the, I mean, trail running is so much more enjoyable than your figure eight that you run.
Yeah. That figure eight is, oh my God, mind numbing.
But how do you like the bike, the gravel bike more than the.
I like the gravel. I did like the gravel. I didn't like the weather. It was super cold. I didn't like the fact that I had to carry my bike for an hour. That sucked. But I've ridden my gravel bike, on that rails to trails or whatever that thing. And I might actually do that, not this coming weekend, but the last weekend before the race. I think I have like a 2-hour ride. I might go do it then just to get out and all that stuff. Yeah, so I do, I like it. I really would like to do, an Xterra race, mm-hmm. which I have to ride my mountain bike, but it's a trail. It'll be a trail run.
Yeah.
I think I need a little bit more experience because it's definitely running trails is so much technical. Mm-hmm. When you're just running road, you don't even get any of that technical stuff. Like, you know, navigating around potholes is the most technical my road running is. So I definitely used muscles that I didn't anticipate using when I did that trail run.
I find the time goes by faster when I trail run.
Because really?
I'm either, like you said, looking at the ground, trying to figure out where I got to step, looking at squirrels, raccoons, whatever's out there, right? But I'm not just looking at the road and, like you said, potholes or speed bumps or whatever I've got to worry about, you know? I find myself thinking about my breathing, my running, how much everything hurts when I'm on the roads compared to the trails.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely different. Somebody asked me the other day or a while back, they're like, how can you run figure eights? And honestly, I think in my mind, I'm developing mental toughness mm-hmm. because I have to run by my house twice every mile and convince myself to keep running. So twice every mile, I have to say one more.
Yep.
Right. And I'm really hoping that translates to race day. So we'll see.
It's a great point. And I live across the street from a park that's 1.2 miles all the way around, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I used to run around that park, but I faced the same challenges that you did, and I wasn't as strong. So now I have to run out just so I can get back home. because I don't have that mental toughness. But that's a great point that you bring up, because if you can do that, when it gets dark and ugly come race day, you can fight those demons in your head that, hey, just keep rolling. You know, it's no different than running past the house one more time. You know what I mean?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. We'll see. Well, man, I'm looking forward to seeing you in person.
Yeah.
In California. We'll have to figure out how to meet up. Maybe Thursday night we can grab dinner. I'll see what Brian and Lisa and them have planned, but I'm sure one more. You can be my plus one.
There we go. I do owe you dinner.
Whatever. But yeah, we'll definitely meet up. Obviously we'll figure out swim practice. Yeah. We'll meet up for that. Who knows? Like maybe, we can all check in at the same time and we can be in the transition area, close by, because, you know, race morning, you got to put air in your tires and do all the things. Right. And so, we can head down to swim start together and all that stuff.
Yeah. I look forward to it, Mike. That Thursday, definitely the swim. And then I'd love to hook up with you for dinner if I can be your plus one.
Oh, so, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it'll be a fun weekend. We'll go and geek out at the Ironman Village together and, you know, have a good time. I actually want to find some of the pros and maybe sit in on some of their talks that they have too.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, normally they have like a pro briefing, a pro panel and stuff like that. So we'll see. That'll be fun. Because there's probably there'll be some big name pros there. It's the first, U.S. race. I think it's usually very well attended too. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see who's there. I mean, they did have that, PTO Miami last weekend, two weekends. So I don't know how that's going to affect everything, but it'll still be fun.
Yeah. We'll see. So cool. Well, sounds like you're ready, man. I know, we're 2 hours apart. I don't know how you're feeling, but I gotta go eat dinner so I can start winding down. But I appreciate you giving me a update on your training and talking through some Oceanside 70.3 race prep with me tonight. So I look forward to the race itself and also commiserating on how it went after the race.
Sounds good. I think we're about 16 days out. So I look forward to seeing you then. I'll text you I'll text you tomorrow telling you day 21 is done with
our app. That's right.
And then I'll touch base with you on that Thursday when I drive down and see where you're at.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, buddy. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you have any questions, advice that you would like to share, or would like to be a guest on the show and share your story, you can email everydayironmanpodcast@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to follow on Instagram @everydayironmanpodcast. Until next time, keep moving forward.